Hello, everybody. I don't know why I felt the need to sing that, but welcome back to another episode of Crime at the Family Table Pod. We are so excited to be here. We are almost at the end of our season. I cannot believe it, but I'm joined today by I need to find more words, my glamorous, my fabulous. It's giving Donna Summer, it's giving Diana Ross, all the things, glitter, glitter, sequins, sparkle. That's what I think. When I think of LaTanya, I think of like glitter, glitter, sequins, sparkle, fabulous, hair, big hair, like I just all the things. Platform heels.
Well, period. Okay, listen. Everybody, like, that made me feel good, especially after the week I've been having, folks. Like, I thank my host and friend for that because I needed it because your girl been literally tripping this week. Okay.
Hey now.
All right. All
Don't
right.
talk about my friend. Don't do my sis.
Listen, I've been living on the edge, okay? The edge. Like, it's been a hell of a week, but I'm so glad to be here with you guys. We have another episode of Cool, for your listening ears, and we hope you enjoy it. But before we get into that, like, I wanted to say, like, our last episode is going to be the shoot the shit episode. And I already have on my mind what I want to talk about because yes, it's so much happening now and so much going on in the news.
The
Like,
people.
as a snippet, Tory Lanez mugshot got put out from the feds.
Oh,
Baby.
they start. What are you doing? They start. Oh my God, that was they start shot. Because that, I don't know what that piece of carpet I.
Yo, that's that 5x7 carpet that that girl said she would rather eat than to be around people that don't like her. Because, baby, okay. And then somebody on TikTok going to say, like, I know sexism is real because it's nothing ever fair. Because if I go in prison, they're going to take my wig, but they're going to let him keep that 27 piece.
That's what I said. I'm like, they still let him keep a little patch.
Little patch of Shrek. Oh my God, that got to be the funniest thing of my day. Like, it made my day better seeing
He and the look on
that.
his face was, he knew he looked stupid. Like,
Right, like, just be bald. Or be like your daddy and tattoo on your hairline and the rest of your hair be shiny bald.
we're not going to talk about Daystar Senior. Well, what is his dad's name? Isn't it like Sunstar or something?
Moonshine, I don't know, baby. Like, child,
I
the
just,
stars,
they all need to.
something's up. It makes me wonder, are they Jamaican?
That's a good question.
Because the way their names are reminds me of like some islanders, like people, like, and it's crazy. Like, please correct me, but I know they're Canadian. I know that for a fact. But like it's giving bad. So that was like the update of the week. Like, that's just a little snippet of like what were we talking about in the shoot the shit episode. I think we're gonna have a few topics that we're gonna go over, things that are happening, things that happen close by Philly, things that are happening now that's going on, and just our thoughts and feelings, kind of laid back style. I can't wait. Hold up. So we are in the 1920s now. I feel like we went through these decades so fast.
It was fun.
Like,
I really enjoyed the theme of the decades because it definitely gave us a different perspective of crime and how detective worked throughout the decades. So I liked it, but the lower we get, or would it be the higher we get?
the lower.
The lower we get, the crazier these crimes are, the more it seems like people get away with certain things. Like
Or the
they have
more you just realize that stupidity is real.
But the
Crazy.
stupidity, because there was no cameras, there was no DNA evidence, there was no like you could literally do these wild things and just disappear into the bushes like Homer Simpson. Like,
No, for real. Like, literally, and no one be none the wiser. Like, I think that the only thing that, like, because at the end of the day, this comes off the idea that most of the time, unless you're like my the guy I did for the 40s, Jake Bird, like, you basically, unless you kill somebody that's like a family member or like a friend, you're not gonna get caught. So you can just hop on a train or hop in a car and walk down the street and just be gone.
get on the, I was about to say, get in that little box car train and skedaddle.
And skedaddle and come back in a week or two.
Which is wild. And I'm thankful to live in a time where we have all these advances in technology and in policing, because
Baby.
you might end up in a refrigerator box somewhere. I don't know.
Child, you might end up somewhere. And then the thing is that, like, you got men that was able to just like do whatever, like women were coming up in crime, I feel like, but it was not nearly as prevalent. And when they did, it was kind of linked to the decade. Like, so if you had a woman that was going in crime, it was like, yes, because women got them freedoms. They showed their ankles.
Oh my God, I was watching something. I just stumbled upon this girl on YouTube, and she was talking about beef in the 1600s and how basically, if you had beef with another girl, like you would accuse her of being a witch. It was funny.
Because I saw her conversing with the devil in
She was like, "So, are you coming to my feast or
the
whatever, like my end of the year feast?" And she was like, "Oh no, I'm probably gonna have my baby in like 2 springs and a summer." And then she was like, "Oh really? Because I thought I saw you doing witchcraft." And then like the man came, the husband came in and was like, "Who's a witch? Men." Just kept calling for the men. It was funny. I wish there was a thing, but I mean, when I was on the bus this morning and cackling because it
I
was
just
so
feel like everybody needs to watch the Crucibles. Like, because if you do not understand how freaking unreal, but like so like serious, but also funny that shit was. Because what the fuck do you mean that you could just say someone's a witch and they would just be like, yeah, stand by right.
like anybody, kids could accuse you. So if you're curious, her name is at it's Mai Mai Senpai, I think. So it's Mai Mai, like Mymysenpai. It's Mai Mai Senpai. And
Oh, I have to watch that video. I definitely have to watch it because
she does like
that's literally the truth.
she does some anime stuff. Like being black type of stuff. She's really funny. And I'm not like a full blown anime head, so some of the things went over my head, but they were still funny.
I think it's one of those things where, like, sometimes anime can be a little too deep because you'd be like, what the hell? But then when you find people that are like can make it realistic, like not realistic, but like make it where you can understand, the layman can understand it. Because try to be in a conversation with them freaking Dragon Ball Z heads, and you'll never know what's going on. You'll never know.
Since 4th grade, I'd just be like, this sounds
Yeah.
like a conversation that I don't understand, so I'm gonna go over here.
What saying is he now?
Just they used to draw the Dragon Ball Z, all the that's all it's like, oh, you could have free period and draw. Every boy was drawing Dragon Ball Z.
Or Yu-Gi-Oh! Like it was the worst. Like it was a time, it was a time, it was a time. You couldn't even enjoy it for the fun because they were serious.
They were really serious, and half of them didn't even know that they were watching anime, which is the
Right,
wild.
yo, that's the crazy part. Like, 'cause anime was weird because Dragon Ball Z came on the weekend on a Cartoon Network. Yeah, it was Cartoon Network. So like people thought like, oh, this is not anime. Literally, Cartoon Network is like an anime channel. Like it used to show like all the late night anime. Like that's how I got into Sailor Moon, Inuyasha. It was a couple other things that came on that was anime that came on like at like later at night when I should have been asleep. And you know, the modern day inventions because late night TV, because that's another thing. These people was just literally doing crime because they really didn't have nothing else to do. Let's just talk about that part. Like, crime was literally being done in these decades because, like, I get it. Like, you ain't have a cell phone. You didn't have an iPhone to FaceTime nobody. Like, you ain't have your favorite show that you could see at 10 o'clock. Olivia Benson wasn't cracking the case open for you. So you ain't know what you did. So you was like, yeah, let me rob some stores.
Yes.
I'm thinking about what that heifer said down the street. I think I'm gonna stab her with an ice pick. Like some shit like that just go through your dome.
The ice cream man is outside of my house right now. I don't know.
Where?
He is parked out there, and
I
at this
remember when the
point,
ice cream man
it's
literally used to stop right after Labor Day. Like right at, by Labor Day, it'll be done. Now they're getting all that global warming money that they can.
listen.
And I'm like, okay, child, the ice cream man knows better than like they probably already came around my way. That's probably why they're down your way because they probably already came down my way before I came home because ain't no damn way. But I know they're trying to get the but there's no kids. Like, get you know what? I'm making a conspiracy. The ice cream man's a drug dealer. Because why the hell is he out? It is nearly not kids is in bed. Tens is in bed.
And the ice cream man
Making
was on the episode of Charmed. I used to watch Charmed as a kid, and that was an episode about the ice cream man. So
yes, oh my God, I forgot. Yo, Charm really, child, bring me back. Bring me back to the first time I watched the Charm episode, baby. It's beautiful, amazing. The Halliwell sister is like some ways. Actually, speaking of, somebody actually recently did something where they calculated like how much it would have, like how much that house would have been like nowadays. Like that house is like a multi-million dollar home.
I was about to say 500 plus, but
Like
they were
because
saying
they had multiple bedrooms, it's a Victorian style home.
they had a basement, an attic. Yeah, that
Like.
house would be like a smooth million at this point.
Yes, and like, and then on top of that, wait, they also had like a little side thing where you could park your car. Then they also had it was like a few bathrooms, and like the whole house was usable. Like you could live in any part of the house except for the basement. That was
Listen.
crazy. And it wasn't like to the attic, they had to freaking go like down like a ladder. They went down like a hallway to some steps.
Was about to say it looked like they was taking a full-blown set of stairs. There was no thing you pulled down from the ceiling and the ladder comes
No,
out.
they was
Like
living a life.
they stairs.
But that's San, and also it's in San Francisco, which is like highly expensive.
And they were like at the top of like hill, like they were on a hill.
Yes. And but I would say this though, like it was three of them living together. They had relatively good jobs. Like Piper was like a sous chef, or like no, she owned her own restaurant.
Was towards like the middle though, but when they first, only Prue had a job. When they first started out, Phoebe ain't had no job. No,
Right.
Prue. Piper did have a job. She was, I think, a sous chef at a restaurant before she opened up P3. But at one point, only Prue had a job, and she was like, "Okay, guys,
Right, because Paige, when she first came, all she had was like a cubicle job.
I think she was like a DHS worker."
Right, like what the hell? Like,
And then no, she wasn't. She was like a step lower than that, and then I think she got promoted to like a DHS worker or like a full-blown like supervisor or case manager or something like that.
right, because she did that because she was in the adoption system because she was, an orphan.
Yeah, she was adopted by those people because technically she wasn't an orphan because her dad was still alive.
I
Right,
think.
but they like, but like they never, it was weird because they, it was weird. Like that whole situation was weird because like, yeah, like why didn't she go to her parents? They gave her away.
Right, but like,
The mom
second place.
was a witch in the.
No, her dad wasn't alive because remember, her dad isn't those other girls' dads. Her dad was her white lighter.
Yeah, that's why they had to. That's why they had to give her up, because that was
Right, yeah, because.
back then. They couldn't do what Piper and Leo eventually did. They had to give her up, like hide her, basically.
No,
That's how she ended up with
that's so
her doctor.
sad.
Yeah.
And listen, A Time to Be Alive when Charm was on, because that used to come on TNT.
Listen.
Baby, TNT used to have them shows. I don't know about now, but TNT used to have them shows.
Listen. I remember when
Okay.
Charm came out. Oh, when it was on WB 17. Forever.
Yes. WB, the WB before it became, what is it now?
The CW.
CW, yes. WB, Warner Brothers, yes.
Oh wait, is it the CW? 57
No,
UPN.
it's the CW. You're right. It's CW.
Is it? Oh no, what happened? Uh-oh. We lost the time, yeah.
Like, yeah, the WB it like became the CW. And when the WB did, first of all, that's the WB used to have Smallville. That shit was so good. And it's so crazy we're talking about all this stuff is because speaking of Smallville, the girl from Smallville, Allison, she getting that prison sentence for that cult.
Yep, it's crazy.
Girl, nexting him.
My favorite.
Yeah, she was like, one of the things is like, it's easy to believe that she got involved in it because maybe you can think of it like the jobs weren't lining up out her door. She was probably feeling dejected. Like people weren't running to her because she really looked like the average blonde hair, blue eyed girl.
Yeah.
Girl next door, really. And yeah, so that type of environment when you're feeling low sucks you in. So it's crazy because so many good shows and so much real life stuff be happening around it. Like Shannen Doherty, Prue, she freaking like she got a standing ovation at 90s Con because you know she's dealing with cancer.
Yeah.
We
Shout
love her. Shout out to Shannen.
out to you, Shannon. We sprinkling healing for you, as I want them to do a
They,
reboot.
I
They
do I, better than the reboot that they tried to do.
tried, but it's just it wasn't the same. It wasn't the same chemistry.
No, it was just thrown together, and it also didn't have the energy because it has to have the energy because it has to have the people that were originally on it doing it.
And everybody's still alive. Oh wait,
Right.
I think the grandma. No, I think the grandma's still alive.
No, I think grandma died.
She
But no,
wasn't.
like the mom is still alive. Like all of them are still alive. All the people. I think the only issue would be getting the one who played Paige involved because she's dealing with all that stuff with the activism, with the Me Too movement, and she's just, doing her own thing.
I would love the original three. I'm not gonna lie. I remember when Paige came on and I was like, who is this? I knew her from
What
Jawbreaker,
if?
but I was
Yes.
like, I don't like
This ain't
this.
gonna work.
She grew on
Yeah.
me. But anyway, we
Okay.
digress.
We digress. All
That's our walk in
right.
nostalgia lane for today.
Right. Because sometimes you need it, because especially with cases like this, and honestly, I feel like we're gonna need it today because this case is crazy. This is another crazy one. I want to give a preface that this case does mention minors. It involves minors. So if you're not going to, if you're not ready to hear about that and you're not, in, like the mindset, you can't handle that, please take care of yourself. We will not be upset. We will be more than happy, like, if you take care of yourself. All right,
Yes,
so
ma'am.
let's do it. All right, so I feel like when you think of the perfect life that you could possibly have, Nathan Leopold and Richard Loeb had the perfect life. They came from affluent families. They were extremely smart. They grew up in an affluent neighborhood. They had all things that money could buy. They were raised by governesses, and by all accounts, like they would have been, could have took the world by storm. And it, like, no one really could have imagined the trajectory that their lives would take. Nathan Leopold and Richard Loeb, they grew up in the same Kenwood neighborhood in the South Side of Chicago. The Kenwood neighborhood, that it was mentioned, like, in one of the articles, that this is also a neighborhood that President Barack Obama himself lived at one point. Not in this era, but of course, but yeah, so the Kenwood neighborhood is very famous. It at this point in time was a Jewish only neighborhood, where you had people from that were rich businessmen that were living, people that had money and prestige. And Leopold and Loeb had all of those things. So
Was this a movie?
huh?
Was this a movie?
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe.
I think it.
Maybe. I maybe. No, like, I think they came out with like a documentary. And I think it was a book, but I don't think they came out with a movie. This would be very interesting told as a movie, though. It would probably be a good, like, docu something. You know what? My brain is telling me that this was a movie. And I would like you to look that up. So, Leopold was, like, considered a young genius. Like, it was literally at 19 years old at the time of this case, he was studying law at the University of Chicago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he graduated from high school at the age of 14. And Richard was Loeb was not far behind him in the brains area. Like, he was one of the youngest students to graduate from the University of Michigan at the time. Like, he was 18 years old when he graduated. Yeah. 18 or 17. I think 18 or 17. I don't remember. I didn't look up their birthdays for some reason. So it's like we kind of start this case in their teenage years. However, like, even though, like, Nathan and Richard were very good friends, like extremely good friends, they were very different. So Loeb was considered to be the more extroverted of the two. He was the person that had to be seen in a crowd. He had the charm, the looks. I put a question mark on that because I've seen pictures of them, and
I just looked and I thought, oh, okay. Teachers
that was a choice. That was a choice of words, a choice of thought. But there are people. Yeah. So, and he was, like, he had the charm, and he was extremely adventurous in a lot of dangerous ways. So one of his first big accomplishments was graduating at 14, just like Nathan, from high school. And then he attended the University of Chicago. But his smarts did not hold up when he came into the college arena because he was matched with people that were older than him in these spaces, and he felt inadequate, and his grades were pretty much mediocre at best. Like, he was like a C student when he's coming from graduating at such a young age. This is not to say he wasn't smart, but it's just a saying that when it came time for him to really show that, he couldn't show it up. Because it's interesting, because you can be smart, quote unquote, around people that may be younger than you, and it's perceived better. But when you're up against people that are, like, literally writing books and contributing to their fields, and you're just coming in here, it can make you feel less than. And so with that, he ended up, after just spending his first year in school, he ended up transferring out and to go into the University of Michigan. At the University of Michigan, his grades didn't get better. He kind of had mid grades at best, but he ended up graduating. He came out with his bachelor's degree and then wanted to go back for grad school at the University of Chicago. Along with this degree, he also bought a alcoholism. So he had gotten into alcoholism, mixing up with bad crowds. He kind of, when the cat's away, the mice will play, as they say.
But he was only
So,
like 16.
yes. And you got to think about it because he's with people that are older than him. So he probably is getting access to alcohol and stuff like that. And also, but you know what's weird is because the 1920s, like you got to think like people were bootlegging liquor. So it's probably like a lot of bootlegging going because of the prohibition.
Yeah, so he was definitely getting some of that little hooch.
Yes, that little hooch, baby. He was living a life. And when he came back home in 1923, that's when him and Nathan reconnected. Now Nathan is the far cry opposite of Lube. So where Nathan comes in, he's more of the quiet, reserved, and extremely smart. Like this, so where Richard couldn't keep up with in school, Nathan was like cutting them, slicing them down by the kneecap. He was writing things for a journal called the Ox, which is the journal, one of the largest journals for ornithology.
I know what that is.
Ornithology.
Is
I
that
know what, is it birds?
I thought so is a branch of zoology. Yeah, the study of birds.
Smart girl, smart girl. And this actually falls in line with what happens later in the case. So keep that in mind. So he writes two papers, he publishes two papers in the journal, this large journal. And this, like, that's not heard of, like, especially when you're just in your bachelor's level of degree, like publishing two papers to a journal is like high accomplished work. He did have some offsets to his personality, though. Like, he was very egotistical. He loved to drum up how good he was at things. But he wasn't a dominant personality by any means. Like, so he didn't overtake a room. He could kind of get lost in the crowd, honestly. And when they talk about Richard being handsome, I was just like, I think Nathan was like a lot handsomer. Like, because he kind of looks like, oh my God, oh my God. What is that actor? He played Bane in the Batman movie. And Venom. I'll come back to that. He kind of looks like him to me. So, yeah, so it was kind of interesting. So, like I said, 1923, they reconnect in the fall. And it's kind of like, let's just burn this world down as we see fit. Loeb was getting into more criminal activity at this time. So not only was he experiencing alcoholism, he was also doing vandalism. They had one point vandalized a fraternity house that Nathan was a part of. They had stolen some items. I think they had stole like $80 of money from there at that times money. It'd probably be considered maybe $800 to $1,000 at this point.
That's not easy, honey.
And they also became lovers at this time as well. So
Give a little.
yes. So they ended up becoming sexual like lovers because so basically Nathan was infatuated with Richard. Like he was obsessed. He was the obsessed personality. And so Richard comes in, he's the more dominant character, whereas Nathan's the more submissive. So Nathan is very egotistically driven, but he doesn't have the heart for a lot of the things that he actually would like to do. And this is what Richard comes in. So Richard does the things that he likes to do, and he's attracted to that. And he begins to do things like they begin to like, so he has to, Richard wants something, let's say from Nathan, or like Nathan to do something. Nathan says, okay, I'll do that if we have sex. Yeah, so it's definitely a dominant submissive relationship, but Nathan is not a 100% submissive personality. So, like I said, with the egotistical personality, you're getting into someone who is kind of manipulating this person. Like he can be manipulative, and he seems so. Imagine you have two kids that are hanging out with each other, and one kid always seems to be in getting in trouble, but the other kid is just there. And then you happen to walk past a room where they're talking, and you hear the quieter one egging that the more dominant personality on.
I don't have the heart to do this, so then I'm going to live through you because I know you're going to do it.
And it was this type of relationship that ended them up with the idea that they could hatch the perfect crime. So, Nathan was kind of like obsessed with another thing, and that was a philosopher by the name of Fredrice. And I'm gonna say Fredrice. So Fredrice was a philosopher in the 1800s, and he basically had this philosophy that humans must craft their own identity through realization and not rely on the transcendence of life, such as God or a soul. So it means basically live, laugh, love. Live your life to the fullest extent and like in the most critical thing, and like live your life YOLO, like live your life like there's no tomorrow, and stop thinking about a moral compass and stop thinking about a soul, stop thinking about your like God, just do things that bring you pleasure. And so when you have a personality like Nathan's, which some psychologists think of him as being a sociopath.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, like a sociopathic personality, you get someone who basically took this and he created this philosophy of a Superman. So the Superman is somebody who lives beyond moral or law code. So they don't believe that as long as it brings them pleasure, they don't believe it is a problem, it is a negative. They can do anything that they want out into this world as long as the end result is pleasurable. So, and this is where we get the plan for murder. So basically, during the spring of 1924, well, the winter of 1923 into the spring of 1924, Leopold and Loeb are planning a murder. They go through all of the things in this idea, like what are we going to do? And like I said, when you have a personality like Loeb is the more actionable one, whereas Nathan plays more of the brains and brawn. So Nathan is kind of this fuel to his fire and building Loeb up as well, and they both kind of feed off of each other. Loeb also is reading like detective novels. That was one of his favorite things to do when he was in college, was reading detective novels. So he felt like he was smarter than the people that were getting caught in detective novels. So he wanted to hatch a plan where they wouldn't get caught. So the plan was basically to kidnap someone and to kidnap a child, and that was specific, to kidnap a child and have a ransom of $10,000. And I don't know what reason that they had for $10,000, but I think it had something to do with the idea that it was enough money where it was significant for the life that they were like holding, but it wasn't too big that the person would have trouble getting the money for them. The only issue that they had was they didn't have anybody specific that they wanted to do. Like, so they didn't know like exactly how they were gonna do that. Like, so who was their victim be? They had dredged up this whole idea, like we're gonna rent a car, we're going to kidnap somebody, we're going to get the ransom, and the plan is that they'll get, like what they'll do is they'll kidnap this person, they'll kill them, Ask for the ransom. Have the person go on a train car that is going to the south side of Chicago, going away from the south side of Chicago, and they'll dump it off the train because they'll be lifted onto a platform, and they would be near the platform, and the train would be going, so they wouldn't get caught, and they could just drive off into the sunset. And then they would get the money, but the person would be dead.
This is a childish plan.
Yes. And again, just as a reminder, folks, Richard is 18 and Nathan is 19. Yeah, so this is definitely childish, like it's child's play, but to the extreme. Like it is be like to think that they thought that that would work. Like it's the idea that they thought, like, hey, we have a plan that's better than what the police can come up with. And things seemed to be okay. Like, you know, it seemed like it was going to work out because in my idea, like, okay, if you think about it just from where they're at in this point of the story, you're like, okay, I get what they think. Like, they think like, okay, we'll just kill this person and they'll never know who it was who's asking for the ransom because they'll just throw it off the car and while it's driving away, we'll be at the bottom and we'll just take the money and then we'll just go into the sunset. Like, how would they know it was us? They're like, I mean, they would get they could have our fingerprints, but we have no record. So if they have no record, ain't no fingerprints to compare it to. So, I mean,
These
the plan was set. The plan was pretty much set into motion.
this really like Nancy Drew style plan. Like this work. Okay. I guess I it's not the worst plan I've heard.
It's not the worst, but it definitely has some holes because I think and the hole is going to widen as we go into the story. Because now we start off with a little hole. There's a little hole. Because my whole thing is, how are y'all going to get away with $10,000? Because how are you just going to have $10,000 and just have money? Like, I understand y'all are rich, like, I mean, they're so rich that they like there's a chauffeur involved in this story at some point. Like they have money, but it's just like it's
Driver.
crazy. Like it's crazy. And one of the other things is that this wasn't about the money. So they think they thought like so police like pretty much thought at some point that the reason why they wanted to do this was because Loeb had gambling debt, but this was not a significant enough money for the level of the crime that they were committing. Like, if you're going to commit murder, you need to get some money that's going to get you about the city. And
Right.
$10,000 probably wouldn't do that. Not especially with two young men with habits. Like, Loeb literally has an alcohol problem, and Leopold is in freaking love with Loeb, so he's going to be feeding into that problem. So it's just like, it's a lot going on. But they decided they didn't think any further beyond what they wanted and the pleasure that it would give them in the end. So on May 21st of 1924, Loeb and Leopold were seemingly ready. They had spent that winter planning and had all the necessary things into motion. They had rented a car. It was called a Willie Knight car, and it's like the name of the type of car it was. And they were driving around in the South Side of Chicago area. Now, I want to remind you of something. They also live in the South Side of Chicago.
Like, I thought the South Side wasn't. I mean, I guess it was probably a different time back then.
Yeah, so the South Side definitely has transitioned and changed, but yeah, like the South Side like used to be very like pretty affluent. Like it had like big affluent parts to it. So and again, they like I said, they didn't have an idea like of who that they were going to take, but they knew that they wanted to take a child because they also knew that they wanted. So Loeb's idea was that they would get a child because it would put them in the newspaper. because nobody gives a damn about like a 30-year-old that's getting kidnapped. People care about a kid, but it would get them enough notoriety, but it would make people's minds boggle because they would never find them. That was the idea, is that they would be in the papers, but they'd be like, oh, you're not gonna catch me. Like, childish.
Oh
Childish.
God, their brains are not fully developed at 18 and 19, so clearly.
Clearly, like brain thought, not connecting. Okay, I digress. So they were driving around for what, like, for about 2 hours, on the south side of Chicago, and they were ready to call it a day. They were like, "It don't look like no fish is biting. We not looks like a bad day for murder. So we're just gonna hang it up." But sadly, but happily for them, a victim kind of fell into their lap. Bobby Franks, who was also Lo Richard Loeb's cousin, a 14-year-old, was leaving a baseball game. Well, leaving from playing baseball, and like after school, this was around 5 p.m. Just so you know, like this is around 5 p.m. and he's on his way home. Like, mind you, he's very close to being home. And Loeb decides like he's the perfect victim because he knew that his father had money, was a businessman. So he was just like, oh, he'll be able to get the $10,000 with no problem.
But you're gonna
And
try to kill your cousin, like.
right. Correct. Correct. We must continue because it gets even stupider. It just gets even stupider how like dumb they are. So they pretty much say you turned it around when they saw Bobby walking to to his home, and Loeb offers him a ride. Leopold, of course, is driving, and Loeb is in the back seat saying like, well, he's in the back seat basically trying to get him like, oh my God, like it just gives me Creeper in the Van vibes. Like, and so he basically keeps insisting to Bobby, like, let me drive you home, like, you know, and trying to talk to him. And Bobby was like, I'm close by home, like literally, like he probably like is like probably a few blocks from his house. Not so much that it would be concerning. So, but Loeb, through insisting, mentions Bobby's tennis racket that he had, and that he had a desire to buy his brother one, so he wanted to talk to him. So Bobby comes up to the car and he gets close, and Loeb basically describes this to police, that he said that he was so close he could almost grab him and just drag him into the car, but he didn't want to do that because he didn't want to cause a scene. He wanted Bobby to get in the car willingly, and Bobby did. He innocently got into the car with no thoughts of what could possibly be happening. Bobby had his guard down, and he talked, and you know, was like talking to Loeb about just different things. And Leopold begins to ride past his block, and riding around, and Loeb says, I hope you don't mind that we're just going to ride around for a second. And he says, certainly not. And as the car went down Ellis Avenue to 49th, and in the 50th, Loeb got out, back a chisel that he had hid in the back seat, and he had covered it, the butt end of it, the bottom part of it, so it basically would be like a club, and proceeded to cover Bobby's mouth, with his hand, and beat him in the head with the chisel. Bobby did not instantly knock out from being hit in the head with the chisel because he was hitting at him at the top of the head and not like the side, because that also is a thing. Like there's certain spots where you could knock a person out and they'd just be down for the count. But he was hitting him on the top of his head. At the first blow, he did not go down. Then the second time, he hit him again. Bobby was still conscious, and he turned and lifted his arm in order to protect himself from the chisel, but he hit him again and again and again. By the fourth time, there was a sizable hole in his forehead, and blood was getting all over the car, in the front seat, on Bobby's clothes, on the floor. It was just everywhere. So just all this DNA. They took him to a pre-planned destination in the marshlands near Indiana Line. They had sh Bobby was dead at this point. They stripped him down and they used hydraulic acid in order to hinder an ID. Then they stuffed him inside of a drainage part, like so he would be hidden, so he wouldn't be found so quickly. And they took Bobby's clothes and began to demand a ransom from the family. So what they did was, after placing his body inside of the drainages, they left. They took his clothes and they threw him away. And then they had typed up a letter which they had put in the post for for his family to get. Mr. Franks, Bobby's father, did get the mail, and he was getting ready to basically get the ransom so he could get his son back. Like, he was like, I'm not playing, I want my kid. So he was on his way to go do the transaction and what they said in the letter. Also, just so you know, they decided to name themselves George Johnson. George Johnson, the kidnapper, has Bobby, and he would never be able to make the drop for the money that he had because 2 days after the murder, Bobby's body was found in the marshland. And pretty much it was kind of game over. So at the time when the police had went out to investigate into the marshlands, they had found glasses that were inside of the mud. And these glasses, they were used to figure out who the criminals were. So they already had the idea that Leopold and Lube were involved. But they couldn't kind of figure it out. They were investigating them as possibility because I believe witnesses had seen them around that area just driving around for 2 hours. and then this young boy, like, yeah, so kind of thing. So, but they had claimed that, so Leopold had basically claimed that him and Loeb were driving around in his car, trying to pick up girls, and they couldn't have possibly, and Loeb backed that up. So they both said the same thing. However, it was found that the chauffeur for Leopold basically said that that's an impossibility that they were in that car because I was working on that car at the time. It was messed up.
It was a rental car.
So,
No, they have
no,
rental.
so basically, no, this, no, the, what I'm saying is, like, they said that there was no rental car. So the idea of the rental car is just gone. Throw away the rental car. They're saying that they took Leopold's actual car, like a car from his home.
Oh.
And the chauffeur was working on the car at the time. So they basically tried to say they were in a different vehicle altogether. And I mean, they couldn't like denounce that. Like, they couldn't kind of say they did a rental car because remember, there is no like, you get what I'm saying? Like, people weren't going to look up for a rental car. Like, they just did not have the thought process to do that. Like, you know, to look into rental cars and stuff like that. Nowadays, if things ain't adding up, they tracking down if a rental car was in the area, like you got the something on it, so you the repo man can come get you and some shit. Like, nowadays this just wouldn't happen. But yeah, the chauffeur pretty much gave up the whole story. And then they ended up, like I said, cross-referencing the glasses as to to three optometrists, and one of which was prescribed to Leopold, and then they pretty much were able to connect the typed letter to a disposed like to a typewriter that Leopold used for typing for school. So he used it during study sessions. So it wasn't his home typewriter. He used a different typewriter. Apparently, some way you can actually figure out that there's different typewriters. Like, I have no idea. They were able to compare that there were different typewriters. So because they're saying that the typewriter they had in the house was not the typewriter that was used to create the ransom note, but it ended up being that it was a different typewriter that was used. So, and that comparatively led to the arrest of Nathan Leopold and Richard Lube. On May 31st, they pretty much ended up confessing to the crime. Richard Crowe, the state's attorney, was confident that he could get both of these young men to hang because he's saying that, like, it's an open and shut case. They've confessed. They have told what they wanted, and the apparent motive for the crime was just pure bloodlust. Like, it was about the thrill. It was not about anything other than being devious and underhanded.
There's
However,
at least
what'd you say?
one of them was a sociopath, and the other one just went along with it.
Also, like, so basically, I think the idea is that they're not saying that Richard isn't like probably a psychopath, but what they're saying is that one personality supported the other one in devious acts, and if they were separate, they may have never done these things, but they fed into each other. And also, Richard also influenced Nathan because Nathan was a goody two shoes. Like, regardless of how annoying and egotistical he was, he probably would have went on and probably ended up running a company and or becoming like a researcher or a professor. Like, he probably just would have lived a regular mundane life. And Richard probably would have probably been some type of playboy and having sex with all these people and just living his life and probably getting arrested a lot for like a lot of disorderly stuff, but it would not have been to this extreme. They brought out the worst possible personalities in each other.
Which is wild.
And also, like I said, they felt like they had the state, Richard Crowe, I mean, Robert Crowe had felt like this is an open and shut case. Like, I have it in the bag. However, Loeb and Leopold, even though they confessed, ended up putting in a non-guilty verdict. And their families ended up hiring Clarence
Dead.
Darrow. Yes. And Benjamin Bran Hirsch to represent them in the case. And this is where Clarence becomes like basically the Johnny Cochran of his time. This man, this first of all, this case was considered the crime case of the century. This was a sensationalized case. Two affluent children have murdered a child. Like, it is unheard of, and it deals with sex and atheism and nihilism and vandalism and murder plots, and like it's just a lot. It's like it draws the people in. It would eat up nowadays. Like, that would sell. They would have a docu-series by the following month on Netflix.
They got one on PBS about their trial, but I don't know how in-depth it is. I think I'm gonna take a look at it later on.
Girl, it gotta be the craziest thing because like they confess. Like, this is literally how they know like what exactly happened. Like, I mean, they could tell by, of course, the autopsy of like what happened to like the head trauma and stuff like that. But the in-depth nature of the fact that they planned this, what went all into it, the rental car and all this stuff. This is from the confession. Like, Clarence had a hill to climb up, and the first order of business was to basically make it so, he was basically arguing. He's not saying that the boys didn't do it. He's arguing against the capital punishment. So he ends up having them change their plea from not guilty to guilty. And you're going to find this to be the weirdest thing. So when you do something like that, what ends up happening is you're not having a trial. You're having a hearing with a judge. And the judge is not saying that you're not going to go to prison. He's saying you're going to go to prison, but what type of sentence are you going to get? It's about the sentencing.
Yikes.
And yeah, it was thick. It was thick. And he was ready to go to war. Like, he was ready to do it. So the defense used wanted to use psychiatrists, or what they were known at this time as alienists, in the testimony to provide kind of context to these boys and who they were. Even Sigmund Freud was asked to come to trial. Yes, girl, yes, the vomit. But he was too old at this time, and his health condition would not allow him to travel to be a part of this case. Honestly, it would have probably been very interesting because, especially when you're thinking about, because they're also bringing in the fact that these boys also have a sexual relationship too.
That's what I was thinking, that he was gonna try and put that in there, because we know how Freud like to get down when it comes to sex and oh, blah, boo, Freud.
Child, it was crazy. I was like, I could see it. Freud probably would have ate this up. Oh my God. He probably been like scrum do yum.
He might have got them off, like, or a very low sentence. They had money. They was gonna call in Sigmund Freud. That's money.
Sigmund. Sigmund. That's crazy. But he couldn't come, but they ended up getting like a few psychiatrists to c come to trial. Crow did not want this. Crow was like, no, because unless that he basically tries to say that they're not trying to plead insanity, so why are we bringing psychiatrists in? But Clarence backhand him and said, this, we're not talking about them saying a psych defense. We're using the psychological nature of this to bring up mitigating factors that contributed to the cause of the crime. And the judge, Cavalli, said, yeah, I agree. I think that this should go on. So proceed. And proceeded with
He's
it.
good.
And he's good. I mean, this man, I feel like this case was crazy. Like he came ready to go because he knew that this case was probably going to set him up for the rest of his life. For both of them, because Crow was also running for an elective office, and if he could get two young men who had killed a child to hang, that could have set up his political career forever.
Yeah.
So he, like, both of these men's careers were riding off of this. And at this time, Clarence Darrow was in his 60s.
Oh, really?
Leopold, yes, and Leopold describes him basically after this case as he's saying, like, you would never have guessed he was 60. Like, he was so diligent and determined, and the way he talked like men half of his age. Like, he was so hands-on. He didn't let age wear him down by any means. He came fortified and ready to fight for these young men.
I thought he
And
was
it
younger.
was right. Yeah, same. But no, and I think he lived until like his 80s. So this man's crazy. So again, like I said, this case is just about it's not about finding them not guilty, because he's saying they're guilty, they did the crime, they admitted to it, blah blah blah. But I don't believe that they need to hang for the crime that they committed. They need to do life sentences. So the first psychiatrist, William White, talks about Leopold as isolated, estranged from peers, retreating into himself where emotions did not exist, only intelligence. Going on to describe his relationship with Loeb as a slave who was saved by his king. And he would basically do anything to repay his king. And I feel like what he means by that is the idea that Leopold, like I said, could get lost into a room. He was not the most expressive person. He was very quiet. He was okay with being in the shadow of Loeb, but Loeb took him out of that dark, isolated place and allowed him to flourish and allowed him to be somebody. And he praised him like a god. Another psychiatrist, Bernard Gulck, said that Leopold was working on hedonistic philosophy, whereby the ends justify the means if it is to provide pleasure. To describe Leopold's relationship with Loeb, he said that it was a paranoid personality with delusional thinking. So, and this comes in part to the fact that you kind of understand from his description of his relationship with Lil that Leopold was pretty much saying that he needed his friendship. Like he didn't know who he would be. And so he would be willing to do anything for him. Like if he said jump, like Leopold would be like, how high? And he would double it. Like he would do anything to please him. He also felt like just he was just obsessed. Like he has a deep obsession with him. And Loeb, as William White said, worked on a infantilism, emotions of a child. So he pretty much was talking about like when we talk about, you know, how the id and like how the complex of like instant gratification, the idea of pleasure and getting yourself quick emotions, that is what Loeb provided off of. Like he ran off of those ideals. Like he was about what would bring him the instant gratification, a thrill, fun, and he had to move on to the next thing. White described Leopold and Loeb as as codependent. Loeb needed Leopold to fill his sense of self, and Leopold needed a king who would be both inferior in intellect and superior in bronze. So I put that in. So like pretty much the inferior and superior, because like I said, with that egotistical mindset of Leopold felt like he was smarter than Loeb. But he knew that Loeb had a personality that was far outreach his own. So he needed him for that. And in that, you find what transpired on May 21st, 1924. Prosecutors used a different psychiatrist, of course, and they said something differently. William Crone stated that Loeb was perfectly functioning with no evidence of mental illness or organic brain disease. So pretty much he was working against, he's saying that like yeah, we hear what you're saying, but we raise you that nothing is wrong with them. And if I'm gonna say something here, I would really much say that both of these can be very true at once, because what you are saying is, well, at the time of the crime, and I think that that's where the insanity, because he was fighting it on the aspect of an insanity plea. Whereas Darrow literally saying, we're not saying that that these two men are psychologically insane, psych ward insane. We're saying that there are some psychological instances that contributed to the personality and what happened on that May 21st day. That's all we're saying. And that
And
you need to take that into consideration.
both can be true at once. That's
Yeah. And I feel like this also, when you bring it brings up the idea that we need to stop thinking about like a psych defense as something that has to be instantaneously only can contribute to that day. These two young men had long-standing psychological and dependency issues. Loeb had a actual dependency problem with alcoholism, and Leopold had a literal dependency issue where like he had problems connecting with people, and Loeb was literally his obsession. Like
all of your mental health, like
yes. And it was like long-standing, and they fed off of each other. Had they been separated at some point, they probably would never have done this. And that's what Darrow is saying, that these two men were just like, they worked together and created a flame. It was just like gasoline and a light, and they just boom.
Ooh, I need to dig Clarence Darrow if I ever get into a situation where I need a
Because
lawyer.
he ready to go down and take it down, okay?
He's good.
Yeah, he's real good. And it keeps getting better. So on August 22nd, 1924, Darrow made a closing statement that was a passionate defense and closing argument to his defense, which he made pretty much like this. It was made more substantial with the graphic of that there were men and women outside of the courtroom just ready for, like, if they could just hang these two young men there, they would have. And it basically fueled what he was saying. And he was pretty much, as he pleaded with the judge and about to the judge to be to lead with kindness above cruelty and love over hate. Like he literally said those words.
He poured it
When
on
he
fire.
was done with his speech, mind you, this speech lasted like a few days. And like, yeah, like the closing argument lasted like a little while. And apparently, the judge and courtroom attendees were in tears.
He's good.
Listen, I was like, this is a Law and Order episode.
Yes.
What? And Crow was not backing down though. Like Crow was just like, okay, you got me a little bit, you got me a little bit, but he decided to take a aggressive approach. So I just want like people to understand like this man is pro death penalty. He is a conservative man, and he is running for conservative office. So a lot of what he's saying, he is feeding into the base of the people that are going to elect him into government. So he talks of he says impactful words such as pervert, atheist, spoiled, smart Alex, and mad dogs in his speech.
I
Yeah,
would say,
like
if you're talking about a sexual relationship between two boys, they definitely gonna throw that out there. And for that time, it was like, ooh, so.
listen, it was crazy. I was like, okay. Oh, just so you know, let me like I wanted to tell you what oh crap. What Clarence Darrow said in his speech. I can think and only think, Your Honor, of taking two boys, one 18 and the other 19, irresponsible, weak, diseased, pinning them in a cell, checking off the days and hours and minutes until they were taken out and hanged. Wouldn't it be a glorious day for Chicago? Wouldn't it be a glorious triumph for the state's attorney? Wouldn't it be a glorious triumph for justice in the land? Wouldn't it be a glorious illustration of Christianity and kindness and charity? I can picture them awakened in gray light of morning, furnished in a suit of clothes by the state, led to the scaffolds, their feet tied, black capes drawn over their head, black caps drawn over their heads, stood on the trap door, the hangman pressing a spring so that it gives way under them. I can see them fall through the space and stop by the ropes around their neck.
He is painting a vivid picture.
Baby, like he is like, okay, I'm trying to sell it. Listen, he trying to get Beyonce tickets. That's all I'm saying.
He's like, can't you see? Can't you see my dream? Like,
What?
there's something so also sick about that. Like, you're getting pleasure, like, you're deriving pleasure from doing this. And I understand this was a terrible crime. If he had sent them to the gallows, I'd be like, okay, off with their heads. Like, I understand. But like just him like really be like, can't you see it? It's like,
No, oh no, this was no, that was freaking Pharaoh
yeah.
Darrow did that.
Oh, what?
So he basically, what he's saying is that like he's basically condemning them. So just as much as people care about the victim being a kid, these two young men are kids.
True.
And basically saying that like y'all are going to derive pleasure. Y'all Christians with high moral standing are going to find pleasure and watch as these two young men hang. And I'm like, and this, and he basically was like, the state gonna pay for it too. I was like, oh, he dropped some tea.
That was good. I
That's a good lawyer. Oh my God.
Listen.
And like Crow, like I said, like he was on the offense. Like he basically was using the strongest language, like cowardly per, and he was calling them cowardly perverts, snakes, atheists, spoiled smart Alex, and mad dogs. And again, both these things can be very true at the same time. Like they can be like atheists and mad dogs and spoiled as shit because they were rich. Like literally, Leopold came from generational wealth. Like Richard Loeb, his dad was the freaking former vice president of Sears.
Oh, snap. That was a big
Yes.
thing too.
Yes, like they lived in the affluent, like they had all things that money could buy and some things you wouldn't even think about. And like basically Crow kind of put in this idea like that Clarence like had his own idea of like his philosophy of life. But the truth of the matter is to ex he needs to execute justice and righteousness in the land. And yeah, and they closed. And the judge was left with these two thought processes to go through, like two men that were very passionate about their what had like because both of like again, I want to keep saying this, they're neither one of these men are saying that these boys did not do it. But they're just saying, do they deserve to die for what they did? And Judge Cavalli had a lot to think about. He had a lot to think about. So 2 weeks later, he came back with his decision. And
Electric
it
chair.
was stop. Stop
Wanted
it.
to gamble. Electric chair.
He called the murder a singular atrocity. He basically like condemned like what they had done to the murder. However, they were sentenced to life in prison.
I
They
think
basically,
I would have done the same thing if I was the judge.
yeah, especially with the way like the freaking the defense attorney. Like I just feel like at the end of the day, damn, he sold me. I was sold. I bought that lock, stock, and barrel, baby. Like I was like, damn, damn. I would feel like a bad person. And basically, this type of defense is also what kind of like it contributes to what happens nowadays is like white men getting off for like vicious murders because he's using the basically the fact that these like are just two rich young men. Oh, they just did a bad thing. Like the bad thing was killing a freaking 14-year-old who happens to be one of the offender's cousins. But Dart, he found the weak spot. Like I mean, damn. If I did some shit, dig that nigga up. Him and Johnny Cochran, put him on my team.
Get the Ouija board out.
Ouija board out. And Cavalli went on to say basically that the judgment cannot be affected by the causes of the crime and is beyond the province of the court, and that predicated the Responsible Human Act. So basically, he's saying that, like, I mean, I agree that Clarence can be right, but my whole thing is we're talking about what happened on this day on May 21st. Of 1924. We cannot talk about what happened when in 1901 and 1902. We can only talk about like what's happening today. But he said that they considered the age of the defendants and the possible benefit to criminology that might come from future study of them with a life imprisonment sentence.
Okay.
And that yes, and not death was a better punishment. Basically, that they would just rot also like in jail, like they would have time to have penance in prison and think about what they've done.
Hope he gave them life without possibility of parole.
I would I'm sorry to tell you that. That is actually just not what. So they went to the Juliet Penitentiary. Together, but they like they weren't allowed to like be around each other because they probably would have sex like
I was about to say,
because
separate these two. That is a big punishment, too.
yes. So in 1936, Loeb was getting into a fight with a man named James Day, which ended up in him being slashed with a razor and dying. Leopold was told about this and was by his bedside in the hospital, in the prison hospital. And it keeps going, girl. It keeps going. I'm not done. Leopold kept his mental prowess, teaching prison school, worked as an X-ray technician. Reorganized the prison library, volunteered to test malaria medication, to be a test subject for malaria drug. And in 1958, after 34 years in prison, he was released. He left the state, and I'm going to put in like in the article where he talks about his time in like prison, like, and like he just gives his like speech. He's older at this point, like 34 years, so he was like maybe he was like 53. So he was up there in age, and he looked completely different. Like, it was like crazy. I was like, damn, it was is that Crow right there in the middle? Nope, it was not Crow. That was Leopold.
Yeah, Dick
And
was 60.
yeah, he left the States and ended up going to Puerto Rico, where he gained a master's degree and taught mathematics, working in a church and a hospital. In an interview done in 1960, he talked about being married and but still being deeply in love with Lube. And 11 years later, in on August 30th, 1971, Leopold died. His corneas were used to help two patients, one woman and one man, to see.
What they gonna be seeing now?
Jesus.
Murder eyeballs, like.
I mean, feel like honestly, what the judge wanted to happen and what like we hope was gonna happen, rehabilitation happened. He's rehabilitated.
Seem like he
And
wasn't
in
the one
his
that
interview,
actually
he was
hit him.
remorseful for what he did.
Cause he wasn't the one that actually did it. He just was
Right. Oh, yeah.
there.
He was just so basically when they were doing the confessions, Loeb and Leopold pointed the fingers at each other, but ended up being that Loeb just kind of agreed that he was actually the one who did the murder. And it kind of made sense, because I just don't feel like for me that it would work for Leopold to commit the murder, simply because, not because of his personality, but because of the relationship to Bobby. Bobby probably would not have trusted for Leopold to be in the back, because when they're having a conversation with Bobby at the car, like, Loeb makes notice of Leopold. He said, oh yeah, do you know, remember my friend Leopold? He's like, no. So he wouldn't have been comfortable to get in the front seat like with Leopold in the back. And because of Loeb's more dominant personality, he probably would have wanted to do, he would not have been a voyeur of this type of crime. He would wouldn't have wanted to have acted as he had done with all other previous criminal acts. Like, he was the one who set arsons. He was the one that vandalized the material. And Leopold was like there with him as a sidekick.
So the one that eventually got out of prison was not the one that did it.
Correct.
Okay. I was like,
But
I don't
they
know.
didn't get like they didn't get life in prison without the possibility of parole. They got like whatever the sentence of life in prison was, and it was 34 years. And I'm guessing that he ended up like, I mean, technically he rehabilitated while he was in prison. Like, he showed the work. He was teaching the prison school. He organized the library, worked as an X-ray technician. He tested malaria. Like I feel like they saying basically when you're writing somebody up to get paroled, I mean, I feel like he had all of the checkpoints to be paroled. Also, you got to think that this Loeb ended up with the most, I guess, punishment you could say, because Loeb was the one who was connected to Bobby. That's his cousin. So he ended up getting his pretty much just dessert. Like, in the end, I don't agree with the death penalty, but I do agree, like, whatever happens, like, at this point, it was happening. Like, I don't, you
Say
can't control prison, it's prison.
he got shanked, so I was
All right, okay. And Leopold, like, I mean, he still was able to live a life, which was more to say than what Bobby had. Like, I mean, he should do better with his life because of the life he took. He should, like, make efforts to, especially when you want to be free, when you don't necessarily deserve to be free.
do we know if he came out of jail and went back to being rich?
So he potentially did, because he relocated to Puerto Rico, but I'm guessing my guessing is, because you got to think, like, they went into prison before the Great Depression. So Yeah. And it doesn't really say that if he had any connection with his family while he was incarcerated, like what was happening, but it seemed like he really wasn't too much worried about it. Like he went and did his own thing. And what a life he could have presented. Like, had he not been just a devious bastard, he could have literally been a lawyer
Yeah.
and lived a very affluent life where he could have just seen the world and did all the things, but he sacrificed all of that for a simple pleasure.
Which is, well, good
And
luck.
codependency is a thing, folks. Codependency.
It is a real thing that can turn that extreme.
Yes, because if you have a personality that is, and then they have also another thing called folie à deux, which is shared psychosis. Which can also happen when people have like they in vicinities of each other for a long time, and one has like a psychosis, and then they bring that psychosis onto someone else. And we talked about that in another case that happened like a little outside of Philadelphia, like the mother and daughter had folie à deux.
Take care of your mental health, people.
Take care of your mental health. I didn't go into things that went on in the 20s, but I'm going to go into that really quickly. So the Roaring 20s, as it was called, like think F. Scott Fitzgerald, The Great Gatsby, flappers, and but not flappers, because that literally was just a small subset of girls who like who were doing that. The patriarchy was alive, proud, and racism was as well. At this time, like of course, you had some people that were flapper girls that were in the major cities, but majority of people were not doing that. And even in the major cities, they weren't doing that. Racism was alive and well. We had the first signs of the civil rights era going on during this time. So like you still had like some protests that were arising and things like that. Women had got the right, gained the right to vote, whereas African Americans had not been able to be afforded that right until many decades later, as we know. And
Isn't
the
it?
prohibition was going on, so this gave way to mobs who were bootlegging, and the rise of people like Al Capone and all the people that we know of in the 1920s, the big wig, she, yeah, she.
Who lay their moonshine?
You're for later moonshine.
It was
And
going
like
down that juke joint, getting some illegal moonshine.
getting some moonshine. And yeah, it was a time, it was a time, it was a time. So, and clearly it was a time to be just the craziest thing. Like it was just nothing to do. Like literally in 1912, only 16% of Americans had electricity in their homes. By the 1920s, 60% of people in America had electricity in their homes. I mean, that's a lot, but like that's still not like that much.
Because women, I guess people were still also like living out in like farmland in the country.
Yes. So they use the sun as their light, and then candles,
Little lanterns.
little lanterns. Yeah, and like plumbing and things like that. And then like during this time, we get the first presidential, like national address, like on the radio, like where
Yeah.
it could be broadcasted. So we're getting into things that like technology was really at its infancy.
Listen, they used to have those radio broadcasts of like different, I was about to say TV shows, but different programs where
Literally.
they would do like, so I think there were soap operas back then, but they were just on the radio.
Radio, yeah, like the radio soap operas, they were like little mini shows and stuff, like they would last like a few weeks. Like then they, you know, they had the silent movie era was still a bustling, and yeah, like everything was as infancy, like there was nothing. Hollywood was kind of becoming Hollywood, so yeah.
Well, this was a doozy.
Yeah,
Like,
a not so perfect crime, because from the get-go, the biggest issue with this whole thing of the perfect crime is the fact that you have two people just trying to do a crime. This is going to go to shit very fast.
And they were so young and made stupid decisions. Now they could argue with, the advances in technology that they that their frontal, whatever it is it your frontal
Yes.
lobe that's not fully developed until you're like
Yes.
25? They probably could have thrown that argument in there. Like, they were just a bunch of stupid kids. And but Clarence Darrow, I
Dig him
can't.
up. If I'm ever in a pinch, get out the Ouija board. Get the seances going, because we need to get that brother on my defense team ASAP.
Call the medium, the long guy, the medium, tell him to tap in. Because
Yes, because I need it. Because that man literally made his that case made his career, which led into what ended up happening in your case that you had last week, where he was like the go-to, like you wanted him with big cases that they were dealing with, like big issues, especially death penalty cases. He was like the man you wanted to call.
Especially if you had the money. He chose not to take my case, but wait, was it because he was doing your case? No, he was doing something else.
No,
But
like I just don't think he had time, because he was like the go-to guy. Like, I mean, he just couldn't wait. Like he could not wait to be used for something like this. This is make and breaking him. I wanted to know like what happened to Crow after this, because I know that like he was mad as shit. I know he was.
I wonder
He could
what
have ate glass.
a may would. I wonder if he had anything to say about it, like later on in his life, or did he think about it? I'm pretty sure he thought about it again and was like, "Urgh."
Yeah, because his whole basis like is that, okay, yeah, they did it, but so they don't deserve to die. Like I was like, what the hell? He was just like, I don't care. Like you're not killing these boys today. Like, and what he would be considered, I'm sure he was not a perfect person, but he would have considered more left-leaning political.
Yeah. Well,
That's it, folks.
you have another interesting case. We'll be back next week. Is next week our final?
No, we have two more episodes. We have you and then me.
I gotta find a good one. We've been back
We've
to
been bumping them out, baby.
We'll be back next week, y'all. But
For another episode.
thank you for
Bye.
listening. See y'all.